This mic? Okay. My name is Mystic. I'm going to be doing a presentation on mimicry and the mimic functions. And in order to explain basically what that is, let me just start with the basic concepts, and then I'll show you an example of the mimic functions in action, and then I'll go into more detail on how to use them, how to write your own things for them, and stuff like that. And then I'll give you an introduction to a program that I'm developing right now, still in development, that takes this concept into a live chat atmosphere. Okay, so first, just basically, what is mimicry? Mimicry is basically the ability to mimic your surroundings, as it says up there. So, you know, like animals do it, like chameleons would do it in the wild to mimic their surroundings in order to survive. And in the sort of cyberspace world where you have the internet and you have just communications going around and you want to encrypt something, the problem with that is that when you encrypt something, if somebody could run a filter on that network looking for encrypted data and pull it right out and then, you know, eventually decrypt it, it's only a matter of time, you know. So what mimicry basically does is it allows you to encrypt data or take any data and encode it in a way that the output does not look like encoded data. And in fact, it mimics the sentence structure or the sort of likeness of a completely different script. And I'll have to sort of show that to you. It's hard to explain. So that's what it says right there. A way to encrypt or hide data in which the output is statistically or grammatically sound. So if somebody was to use a filter to look for it, it wouldn't come up because it would just look like normal text. And before I go on, I want to show you an example of that. So just give me 1 second. Just sort of put it in perspective of what we're talking about. So here's a Java applet. I'll give you, at the end of the presentation, I'll give you an address to where you can actually download and use this program. And the source code for this is also on the CD. So basically, I just want to enter the message here. Push mimicry. And now what it says there, basically what it generated is a block of text that mimics the announcing of a baseball game. So I'll just read you a little bit of it. It says, "Well, Bob, welcome to yet another game between the Whoppers and the Blogs. Here in the scenic downtown Bolvania." I think it's fair to say that plenty of bubble off, bog fever, it just talks about the game. So then taking this text, we can just run remove mimicry, and there's the original text right there. So that's basically what the mimic functions do. Oh, and I forgot to mention, the mimic functions were first released in a book entitled Disappearing Cryptography by a man named Peter Wehner. He was the first one to sort of take this concept and create a proof of concept, which are the mimic functions. So this is his code that I'm showing you. And again, I'll give you a link to that where you can go buy the book and go to his website. Oops. So now the question is, you know, how do you tell the program what to mimic? And mimic does this by what it says, generating text using the syntax described in what's called a context-free grammar, and hides the data by the choices it makes in that grammar. And I'll go through and explain that more in detail as I go on. First, I'll describe what a context-free grammar is. A context-free grammar is basically a very specific way of describing language in general. And in order to do that, it uses terminals, which are words or phrases, and they're static, as it says there, variables, which are places where those decisions, where decisions in the sort of phrase can be found, and productions, which describe how a variable can be converted into different sets of variable terminals. And I, again, I'll show you an example which puts it all in perspective. So here you see a variable. So here's an example of a production. It shows a variable, and it shows phrases or words. So to describe, to show a context-free grammar on paper, you would have the variable, I think the variables are in bold, and then this is what you put between the variable and the rest of the production, and then phrases are words. So this is a series of productions, and it's describing a complete context-free grammar. So this is a good way to describe it. Okay, so you have start and a noun and a verb. Those are both variables, right? Start is where you start. Nouns can either be Fred, Barney, or Fred and Barney. And the verb can be went fishing or went bowling. So this context-free grammar can generate sentences such as Fred went fishing, or Barney went bowling, or Fred and Barney went fishing, etc., etc. So that's basically what a context-free grammar is. Putting it very simply, because I don't want to get too technical into it, in order for Mimic to hide binary data, it creates a tree of choices based on those context-free grammars. So if you look at here, there's all sorts of there's different choices that can be made. The noun can either be either of these. So it goes to these choices, and it creates a binary tree. So it starts here, and then it creates a 1 and a 0. Either 1 could be Fred, 0 is Barney. And then it goes on and on and on. So when it creates this tree, the leaves of the tree is what would encode the right bits. So again, I'm going to give you an example so it's easier to understand. So we're going to start out with this context-free grammar. There's start and nouns and a verb, and then Fred and Barney, and then verb went fishing, where is also a variable, went bowling, where, the other variables, and then direction. So you can see the bottom there. Okay. So let's say So let's say you want to hide 1010. You want to hide those bits. What you want to hide those bits given this context-free grammar. So it's going to go through and say the first is going to start at start, and there's nothing hidden because it's just the start. And then so it's noun and verb. And since it's a 1, it'll go to the first choice, which is Barney. And then it'll go on. Next one is a 0, and it's going towards Barney, verb, and you see the verb 0 is going to be went fishing. So it'll go down, went fishing. And then here it says, Barney went fishing where? It's a 1, so it'll go to here, in direction Minnesota. So it'll go here and say, went fishing in direction. So it'll say, direction 0 is northern, so it's northern Minnesota. And so that would give you the sentence down there if you can read it. It says, Barney went fishing in northern Minnesota. So Mimic needs the bits to be encoded, which can be the text that I entered at the beginning, which are converted into bits. And it needs a context-free grammar. Those are the two things that it needs to encode and also to decode. And the way that Mimic understands context-free grammars is through what's called a grammar file. And it's something that's unique to Mimic. Let me give you an example of a grammar file, just really quick. So you can see here. I should have it up already.
now.
Really? Oh, man, I didn't know if you didn't... Oh, jeez. Okay, well then, you know what? Here. All right, then I'll just go through this. You'll see an example as it goes on. Oh, jeez, I did this again. Okay. Okay, well, in order to create a grammar file, in order to show the variables always start with an asterisk and must be one word. Productions are separated between numbers and forward slashes. The numbers at the end of the productions, and I'll show you, there'll be a little bit of example, indicate the weight given to that choice. And they don't weigh out each other. Like, just basically, the higher the number, the more probable it'll appear in the production. And I'll give you a better example of that. The end of variables indicate double slashes. Starting variable is always one slash value first. So here's an example of what a small grammar file would look like. AA start being, it would always be alphabetically first, so that would be the start. Fred went to con is a variable. And you see how it's just sort of, it's the same way as the context-free grammar looks, but it's done in this sort of grammar file format. And then the numbers at the end give the weight. So here, this number is smaller than the other one, so this one would occur less in the final encoded formation. The limitations of MIMIC, you can't have a grammar that is ambiguous. So there can only be one way of producing one phrase. If there were more than one ways, then the encoding wouldn't work. So in order to do that, that's an example of an ambiguous grammar where there's more than one ways. In order to do that, all the productions in a grammar file have to be in a certain format. Basically, it just means that the variables... All variables have to be at the end of the productions. You can't have a variable and then something static afterwards. It helps make sure there are checks in the program to make sure that there aren't ambiguous grammars, but this helps out just to make sure. Some of the limitations of MIMIC is that, as you saw before, I had a very small text and it generated a huge amount of data. It all depends on the number of possibilities in the grammar file. And in that case, if there's only a few number of possibilities and each of the possibilities have a large amount of text, then you're going to generate a huge file because it needs more possibilities in order to generate a larger tree. So if it reaches the end of a grammar file, it'll repeat and go back to the beginning. And also there's randomness built in, but it's not sophisticated. So if somebody really wanted to, they could write some sort of a filter to, if they saw enough data go through, they may be able to write some sort of filter because it's not, the randomness isn't very well done. You'll see bits that'll generate the same encoded data sometimes, but there is randomness there. IRC MIMIC, this is the program that I'm working on. It takes this idea of MIMIC, of being able to take a grammar file and generating text. But what my program does is I wrote a grammar file that mimics one side of an IRC conversation. Just a simple, like, hi, how are you, what's your name, where are you from, things like that. And then it sends that to any sort of any NIC that you specify. So it waits for on the server for a connection. It waits on the server for that specific nickname to message them. Once they message them, then the program will start sending. Will send one side of the conversation and then wait for something else. And so you send another one, it'll send more of it. So it's built in a way that the end product will look like just any normal IRC conversation. But in that one side of the conversation is an encoded message. And in order to do this right, because that small text generates so much data, I did a few little tricks to get the maximum number of possibilities out of the grammar file. And I didn't write down what I did, but what I did was basically for things like the bot would say, you know, my name is. And the possibilities that I would use is I went on the internet and found like the census information for the top, 1,000 names in the country and put that in as all the possibilities. Yeah, question. It's not that advanced right now. All it does is it does the same thing that first program I showed you does, but instead of generating a baseball game, it generates one side of a complete conversation. So it'll send that one. So for instance, it'll say, hey, and then you type back, the person will type back, hey, and the computer will bring back, how are you? That's one side of the conversation. And you'll say, you know, good. The computer will bring back something random like, that's nice, you know, and then you'll say, how are you? And then the computer will say, you know, I'm all right. And those things, hey, how are you, good, and I'm all right, have already been encoded. That's what it's sending. So I did the maximum possibilities, did things like that. I also use common grammatical errors that people use in chat, using R instead of A-R-E, and I use, you know, capital letters, lowercase letters, just to maximize possibilities. And I was able to generate, like, for instance, if you said, like, this is a test, like I just showed you, that would fit in one conversation that's just maybe about 10 lines long. So things to look at the IRC. If you want this is still in development. If you want a copy of the source that I have right now, I don't have it on my website right now. But if you want, you can come up and see me. I'll give you a copy. I have it with me. But there's other ways that you can go. I will have it on my website eventually, though. There's ways you can go further. You could have two bots talk to each other. You could actually have two bots have the same grammar file and have actually conversations with each other and be talking about something relevant while they're actually sending maybe a third party some sort of encoded information. You can just add more to the grammar file, give it more options, possibilities, make it sound a little more real. And here are some of my resources. This is where you can go. This is where you can go to look at that that Java applet that I showed you at the beginning. So also you can learn about spring cryptography at www.wainer.org. That's Peter Wainer's website. You should also check out SpamMimic, which takes the mimic functions and actually you enter a message and it generates text that looks like a random spam message on the internet. So, you know, you could send that out it's funny because somebody will read it and it doesn't really say anything, but if you keep on reading it, eventually you get bored, but it doesn't seem like a computer is writing. It really does seem like, you know, it's something that you'd actually see as a spam message. This is a place to go to get the original mimic functions, which are actually written in C. This is where you can go to get those. If you want the Java version, I do have it. It is on the CD. It is on the DEF CON CD. And the Disappearing Cryptography, that's that. The book is a second edition out. IRC Mimic, it's not up yet. Another thing, I'm a member of the Tri-Valley Security Group. And we'll actually be doing a talk tomorrow that you should check out on the box that we built called the Undetectable Packet Sniffer, which is where we took a packet sniffer and stuck it into a stock-looking uninterruptible power supply box. It's really neat. You should go check it out. And that's it. I don't know if I have any time left for questions, but that's it.